Welcome back to another episode of If You Can't Handle the Heat. I'm Gage, joined by my brother Joe. Joe, how we doing, man?
First day of 6-on-6 in team practice today, and we absolutely got after it, so
yeah,
pretty fired up, to be honest.
It must be nice, man. I mean, over here, we've still got nothing going on, but that's the thing that kind of bugs me. One, obviously, we can't play, and two, we want to give our viewers volleyball content, but we can't over here, so we're trying to make do. In the next couple weeks, we'll kind of get that your way, but I'm glad that your practice went well. But a lot of news has kind of dropped in the volleyball world in the last 24 hours. First things first, the American Sports Center in Anaheim got shut down or closed down. For those of you listening who don't know what the ASC is, that's where usually SCVA hosts a lot of tournaments there, but that's also where USA Volleyball and, USA Men's Volleyball practices, and that's pretty much their main site. I mean, that's where they practice. That's where the women's team practices.
Yeah, no, it's – I mean – And anybody from the West Coast or even the top teams in the Midwest, that's like the place where you, growing up, where you played all your big tournaments, all the big qualifiers, everything. Like, there's, I think everybody has like such good memories from playing there and all the experience that they had while they were there. So it's pretty sad to see. It's just another, and it's also the, like you said, national team training center. So it's gonna be interesting to see what USA Volleyball does.
I think they,
and it's gonna be tough to see. How people rebounded, like where the tournament's going to go. It's going to be really tough, and obviously COVID's affecting so many people in more ways than you could have imagined a couple months ago, so it's sad to see that happen.
Well, where do you think USA Volleyball is going to move to?
I think they're end up in Irvine. That's kind of the rumors right now. They said Colorado Springs, but I think somewhere Irvine, I heard.
Because USA Volleyball is out of Colorado, though, right?
Yes. For now, I think they're trying to get things shifted over to the same place wherever the training is going to be.
Why Irvine?
But I would, because somewhere like Colorado, like there's not much place to be, and so many players are from California, so I think it makes the most sense for them to go there. They want to go to a place where families and stuff, when they come back from overseas, they'll have, it's a nice area, easy to get there, obviously, for most guys, and I think it's easy. I mean, it probably isn't the cheapest there in Orange County, but they want to make sure that they have a training site that's makes everybody feel kind of at home.
Is it UC Irvine or Irvine?
No, it's in Irvine. I don't exactly know the logistics of where and everything. It's just in Irvine.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to build something or if there's already a training center there. I imagine there's already a training center there they have their eyes set on, but nothing's official yet, and USA Volleyball hasn't released any statement. So I'm going to assume that that's going to be coming very soon, I would hope.
Yeah, when I heard that, I was, like, so surprised because we've been playing there. I played there since I was, like, 11 years old, and then it got shut down. I was like, dang, that was, like, the place to be. But, like you said,
COVID. That's where Gage got all his the worst yelling. I think those are some of, like, the worst from our dad. I think the worst cases of you getting yelled at happened in that center.
That's the only time he made me cry. I was 11 or 12, and he goes and he's talking to me, and I remember I was late. We just won the quarters. Or, I mean, we just won the round of 32, and I'm like, oh, can I go watch that team over there? And he was like, all right, fine, go watch that team. We're about to play soon, and then I'm over there for like literally 3 to 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, I see you guys warming up on the court, like three courts down. So I run there, and I'm late. And I put all my stuff on. My dad was not happy. And I have a horrible, horrible first game. Like pretty much cost it.
Against Balboa.
Against Balboa. And then he pulls me aside, and he just absolutely lights me up. I'm 11. He's like, you're the reason why we love, like, lighting me up. And then I'm just kind of started tears in my eyes. And then I actually played, and then I played really, really well, and then we went in three. And then, I've gotten some pretty bad yellings throughout the years.
And after that, Gage was never late again.
That's not true. That's not true at all.
Not true
at all. Dude, I was for those of you seeing our Instagram page, you see we have a bus. Dude, that thing is my car. Well, it's technically the club's car or whatever, but it's, I use it. And that thing does not go very fast. Remember, I was late to practice one day. And I was just going, I was like, oh, crap, I got like 14 minutes to get there. And it was usually like a 16 to 17 minute drive. So I kid you not, I put it to 85, 90, and the whole thing was shaking. The whole inside car was like shaking, like, da, 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 on the freeway. And I was late by 20 seconds, so I had to do 200 laps. And then, for my dad. And then one time, I was getting warm, or I was at practice 30 minutes early, but I was in the next court over, and I was like doing my rollout because I had quad issues. And then they started warming up, but I was doing my quad warm that I needed to do. And then I hop on the court. I was only gone for like 2 minutes, but I was literally on the next court, like 5 or 6 feet away from him. And my dad's like, "Nope, you're late." I'm like, "What?" I was like, "I was just doing my warm up right there. You just saw me. I was just getting warm." And then he's like, "Nope." And then I had to do 200 laps for that as well. So I've had my fair share of 200 laps in my volleyball career.
And we calculated out the 200 laps was something like 4 or 5 miles or something like that.
Yeah, dude. And then
imagine
and then,
running for being 2 seconds late.
And then my
for all you people.
And then not even late. And then my freshman year of college, I'm in the dorm, so I'm not living with Joe, so not waking me up at like 3 a.m. I remember. Apparently, I don't remember this, but apparently the alarm went off for 6 a.m. practice at, like, what, 4:45 for me. And Cade, my roommate, kind of saw that I woke up. I left the room. I come back. And then I go back to sleep or something like that. And I don't remember any of that. And it happened, like, 45 minutes. So for 45 minutes, I was out and about, just blacked out. And then I wake up at, like, 6:30. So practicing will be going on for 30 minutes. And then I get to the gym, and then Charlie just looks at me. All the balls just stop in the gym. Everything just stops. And he's like, just start running. And so I run the whole practice. I ran 30 to 40 laps around our gym one, which is a crap ton if you've ever been there. It's not a small venue.
You ran way more than 30 to 40 laps. 2 hours worth of running is way more than
And this is the thing. People have been late. For example, Patrick Gassman is notorious for being late. To our practices, and well, not notorious, but he's had it more times than others. And I am the only person, and other people have been late. I'm the only person who has ever had any consequence or ever had to run. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. And then Milan, I remember he was Charlie was gonna make him run, but then Milan's like, nope, he shouldn't do that. Let's just play. I was like, didn't do that for me. Like, I was running miles out here, and I was like throwing up. I was like, ugh. Actually, my freshman year. That was before Tui got there. And then I kind of had the edge over, I think it was Mamane. And then after that, I did not. After that, I was riding the bench. Anyway.
So, Gage, I think we made the people wait long enough here. I'm going to introduce the guest today because I'm so fired up for it. But if you are even paying attention on Netflix at all, you know exactly who this is going to be. Coach John Beam from a big-time Netflix series, Last Chance U. Many of you guys know it. It's a football documentary series, but we had a connection to get him here on the show, and we couldn't pass up on that chance. And he's kind of grabbed the hearts of a lot of people, and he's a very special person. You could tell just how he interacts with his team, how he interacts with his coaching staff. And he's an American football coach for all you European followers. And if you haven't seen this series, please go check it out. You just haven't been paying attention if you haven't watched this, because it just pops up. You see his face all over Netflix. So if you haven't seen it, then you're out of the loop, and you need to get your head screwed on, because he is an electric figure. Can't stress how excited we are to have him on. Coach John Beam here from Laney College, the Netflix series Last Chance U. Let's welcome on here, Gage.
Alrighty, joined here now by John Beam, head football coach at Laney College, athletic director at Laney College, a good friend of our mom's, that's how we got this interview, and now an international superstar from the Last Chance U series. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you. And I'm a volleyball fan too, bro.
Yeah. Well, you were asking before the show about our volleyball. So what's happening now in Hawaii? I just got on my 2 week quarantine yesterday, and then today they just implemented another 2 week stay at home, and then they're closing the beaches down. So I have another 2 weeks here. So there's not much volleyball going on in my life.
Can you at least be in the water?
Yeah. So what you can do is you have to park
far away. Like, you can't use the parking, and then you can use the beach to get in the water. You can't, like, stay there, though, or else you get, like, ticketed or arrested or whatnot. But
Man, it sucks.
Yeah, I know. It does, but is what it is. But how's life with you guys? How's Laney College? I know that football is still trying to compete and everything in practice. So what's the situation with you guys?
I think it's, you know, the problem right now is that because of COVID and the different counties all have different rules, like at DVC where your mom's working, they're already conditioning. We're not yet. Our goal is to condition soon, but currently we're not. I'm assuming we froze.
Did we freeze a little?
You're good to go.
We can still hear you. As long as we can hear you, it's good.
Okay. All right. So currently right now we're just waiting for our administration to allow us to come back to condition. We're looking to do it in early September. And so, you know, the guys right now, you know how it is. You're an athlete. They're scrambling. They're not used to, you know, they're used to having structure. They're used to having timelines, and now there's no timelines. And then at the same time, they're trying to learn how to go to school online. It's a tough one right now.
So the one thing, like, after watching the series and then I talked to my mom actually about you and your program, the one thing I want to target, because I know that in volleyball, I don't think there's any program that can even come close. Even like at the community college level, what I hear, I don't think there's any program that can come close to relating to what you have to deal with. And you have such a good understanding of college athletics and the college athlete and what's required to be successful. I wanted to ask you, when you're speaking to kids, like, I have kids, even today now that I'm out of college, I have kids come up to me and ask me, like, what is required when you're looking for a school or when you're looking to go to the next level? What are the most important things for student athletes to focus on? Because it's not like the materialistic things. I would say, especially like you have an understanding of this, the materialistic things at a university, at a college, only go so far, and they only can get you so much, you know, up front. And for you, when you're recruiting a kid or you're looking to move a kid on to the D1 level, what are like the key things that you see that make those kids successful at the next level?
Are they coachable, right? Are they willing to take coaching? And when I say that, you know, a lot of guys will come in. So I've been doing it for 40 years. And one of the things that comes in, some of the schools, right, the head coaches, well, they come in, they want to know if the kid can be coached hard. But when they come to recruit one of my kids, they skip that one because they know I coach them hard, right? Because some kids are fragile. And it's okay if you're fragile, right? But know that if you're going to go pick a school that's coach will fit your personality, right? If you're not used to a guy that's hard or a woman that's hard or hard bearing on you, then don't pick that school. Pick a school that's going to be more conducive for your learning modalities, right? Or your personality in some ways. But sometimes you may want to pick someone that's different, right? Because if you're more laid back and you want to try to get more of a fire, then pick a person that's going to give you that fire. The other thing I think is to look at the place that's going to worry about you as a whole person and not just as a volleyball, football player, baseball, track athlete or whatever, right? Is this person going to be with me for my life? Are they always going to be there for me? And that's one of the things I pride myself on, is that the players that have come through me and even kids that I taught in PE over the years know that I will always be there for them. And that hasn't changed. Nor the other thing, right, and I don't know your volleyball coach at Hawaii very well, but before that, the women's coach was there, was an institution, right? He had been there forever. That's something to me that's important, right? Instead of the guy looking for the next job, because if he's not worried about the next job, then he's really worried about having a presence in this job and making sure that the program is his. And so, you know, kids can come back because you can't leave. Like, if you keep leaving, then who are you? What is your philosophy? It never stays, right? But then the way I've done it, it's almost been institutionalized. Beam is Beam, but he will always be there and he's not going to change, but he will always pick up your phone call. So I kind of like that.
Absolutely. I think those are very valid points and important for coaches and especially student athletes to realize, because realizing the truth of the situation is so important, I think. And so many times athletes don't see that. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, it was very evident that you have a lot of connections to the D1, to a lot of high level D1 programs. I think that's why you see, that's a one small reason of many why student athletes come to play for you. What is something, because, you know, there's always, I think everybody could name, like, what are the things that you look for in a program, but what are red flags that you see in programs, say, like, a university comes to you, and what's something that sticks out to you, like, that you would say, I don't think this is the best fit for my student athletes to go there, like, when you're looking, going through the recruiting process?
Well, one of the things is that I tell my kids, so, like, Ray, some of the guys on the show when they were younger, they're in meetings with me when I'm with a Division I coach, and they hear me tell the coach the truth, right? And I will not sugarcoat it. So I will tell the coach, hey, you know, this kid's effed up. You know, he has no work ethic. He's a talented kid, but he has no work ethic, right? And I'll say that. And then I've had actually D1 coaches still take that kid, even though I've said he has no work ethic, right? And then they come back and say, hey, coach, this guy's a bum. He doesn't work. I said, didn't I tell you that in my office? But you thought you could change him, right? Or on the other end, I'll tell a guy, this guy will work his tail off for you. You can't, you'll have to lock him out of the weight room. You'll have to lock him off the field. He's going to do everything necessary to be great. He may not be tall enough. He may not be quite fast enough. But this is going to happen. And a prime example is Jared Smart. Jared Smart had one division one offer, and that was to University of Hawaii. But I told everybody, this kid's work ethic and his hands are unparalleled, right? Like, well, he's not quite fat. Don't worry about his speed. He'll get open. He'll jump. He'll fight for the ball. He's a competitor, right? Rolo takes him to Hawaii. Now he's on the Blitnikoff list. There's this intangible that you can only see if you work with someone every single day. When I came and watched you two play, and you guys were kind of up, and it wasn't a very good team. But then they kind of came back rolling on you, and you guys were out of the game. And then I could just see you guys like trying to chomp, coach, let me back in, let us get going. Let this happen, right?
Yeah.
You don't see that in a match unless you're outside watching. Like, I like to watch what's happening on the sideline in the bench area, right? Is that guy going to be up rooting for his teammates versus he's just worried about himself? And that, to me, is an intangible that I think most coaches sometimes forget to look at.
And so you kind of mentioned about the player that's all about or kind of more about himself than the team, right? No matter how it kind of comes off. And I've kind of had my experiences with good players that say they're all about the team, but let's say he's one of the top players, the coach wants to play him all the time. How would you handle that as a coach? One of your top players says he's all about the team, but you kind of, not that you need him, but he's a huge part of the team, but at the same time, like, he's not all about the team. Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's something that we all struggle with, right?
Right.
You know, I think when I was at the high school level, I struggled less with it. At this level, I struggle a little bit more with it, you know, because you don't want to hurt 100 players to make a point to one, but sometimes you have to. And there was a couple times in Netflix, you know, there's a guy not playing, you know, I benched a starting our best D lineman in some ways, right? Because of some stuff that was happening off the field. And they go, well, they need me. I go, we don't need him, right? And it's really sometimes the assistant coaches in my profession that I have to worry about, right?
Yeah.
They're so, oh, we need this guy. No, coach up the other guy, right? You don't need if this guy you need, but he's not dependable because he missed practice or came late to a game or something, how can you say you need him? When you most need him, he's not going to show up. But here's this other guy that's not quite as good, but shows up every day. We got to flip that a little bit. But at the same time, if I'm about education and I'm about teaching, I got to find a way to make it a teachable moment for the I guy too, right? How can I make the I guy start to become a team guy? And so that's a process that we always work on, right? And sometimes you're going to be way more successful than others. But, you know, in any sport, in volleyball included, right, you do need that it guy sometimes. The guy that's got a little extra swag. Right. Got a little extra something that he turns it on at the right time. And, you know, you go, okay. You know, so you're tempering it, right? And this is the one I'm sure people will not agree with, or maybe they will. You can't treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
You want to. You really do. But you can't, because I might know that you miss practice because something that's happening at your home life that I can't really share with everybody, right? And so I'm allowing you to miss, but I'm still playing you. Whereas the other guy misses and you go, well, you miss, you're not playing. They go, well, coach, why? Well, you just chose to miss. I had a kid a few years ago, big time Division I D lineman. and he went down to LA on the weekend to hang out with his girlfriend. He had those standby hookup tickets. You know, everybody in Hawaii has hookup tickets, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so he doesn't get back, misses practice because of it. So I sat us. But was another guy missed because there was an incident at his house. Someone broke in. You know, he had to help, you know, secure the house, things like that. So it's a little different, right? But you can't say they both missed. Well, they missed for different reasons, right? One was frivolous because you just wanted to hang out with your girl. And then you, instead of realizing you had to come back, you waited to the last minute to come back thinking you could get on with a hookup ticket, or somebody else was taking care of safety issues at their house. So, you know, you really can't treat everybody the same. You got to have an overall philosophy, but ultimately as the head coach, I have to make that decision.
And so, I think that, to be honest, and I see coaches a lot, and coaches will try to say like, oh, I'll treat everybody the same, but that's when it comes down to it in the biggest moments in it and everything, like you see when the truth comes out. And I think 100% it's really tough for somebody to say that and hold true to that. Cause it's just a difficult situation. Like you said, there's so many different factors that go into it, and you got to do at the end of the day, like the program has to be the, at the top of the list when you're making decisions. Like you have to do what's best for the program. And sometimes, like you said, it's making it's teaching somebody a lesson and kind of make an example. But also, you got to.
And sometimes, yeah, you're making an example. Sometimes I am making an example, right, for the other group, right. So one of the things that doesn't come out in the show so much, but I was hard on RJ, the receiver, sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Well, because I had these 3-4 freshmen that would have melted. They were running incorrect routes, bad releases. So, RJ's a little bit stronger. So RJ took it so the other kids could see it too, right? And I couldn't – and they said, well, people said, well, you weren't hard on Dior. Yeah, but I knew what Dior was going through at home. He didn't need another person badgering him all the time, you know, like almost right. abusing him because he's been through a whole life of that. So we temper how we do certain things just because we know their backgrounds, right? Not saying it was right, no means, right? But it's just how we make those decisions as a coach to treat folks.
I want to kind of get into the show here. You kind of alluded to it. So last chance you asked you, well, first of all, so they come up to you, they approach you. Okay. We want to do this. We want to kind of film a year. Yep. I'm sure you were familiar with the show already. And so how, I guess, nervous were you that, cause when looking at the other seasons, there's a lot of, well, non-legal activities out, non-curricular activities going on. How nervous were you? Okay. Possibly not hurting your possibly hurting Laney's reputation, or people seeing this or people seeing that, when it could hurt your reputation or whatnot? Or was that not a concern at all when they first approached you?
I think it was, but two things. Number one, it's funny because your mom and I had a conversation. She didn't know I was in the running for the show, right? Because they'd already talked to me, but there was a rumor that there was another college in the Bay Area that was going to be the show. And your mom was telling me like, what idiot would ever let him on their campus? To myself, yeah, I know that idiot right now. But I thought that was kind of funny. But here's the thing, right? I think both of you, I wanted to do it for a reason. Once we decided that we were afraid of it, and we had to decide that as a family, right? My wife, my daughters, and I, we had to decide it as a family. And then I'd kind of talk to my coaches, you know. But, you know, I was going to be the forefront of what's going to happen. And so once a family decided that let's do it, I wanted to do it for the right reason. I want to show that you can coach a different way than what we've seen. If you guys have seen the other shows, that you didn't have to totally berate guys all the time. You didn't have to do these things. That was number one. I wanted to show a different way. I wanted to show Oakland. I love Oakland. If you can see the show, I think you can tell, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to show my city and what a beautiful place it is and how talented it is, even though it gets a bad rap. Right. I wanted to help Laney. Laney is struggling. People, you know, think bad of Laney. You know, you got DVC over here, very nice school in the suburbs, right? You got City College, this giant school in the city, and then here's Laney. So I wanted to show that. I also wanted people to see how we do things in the California junior college system, right? No scholarships, no dorms, no meals, and see the struggle, the grind that our student athletes have to do. And so I wanted to portray that. And then hopefully, you know, the true of who we are will come out. And, you know, I'll leave it to you to see if that came out the way I wanted it to, you know. 40 years of coaching, could you see a difference? You know, a love for players and the community, could you see that, right? the struggle that California kids go through to pursue their dreams, right? Could you see that? And if all that happened, then what I did was good. You know,
100%.
Oh well.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that was no, I appreciate like everything and your coaching style. I think it's up because I've talked about it on kind of previous shows that I eventually wanted to get into coaching when my playing career is done and my body no longer goes, but I feel like I can play for a while. I think I want to venture into coaching. And so there's a lot of things that I picked up from you and your coaching staff and how you guys handle things. I took a mental note for my future with that. I also want to, it kind of relates to the show a little bit. I guess it totally does, but was there a point where you ever kind of hesitated about how you're going to go about doing things because you knew the cameras were there, or was that not so difficult from the beginning?
Yeah, there was a, you know, well, number one is the first thing you learn, right? I mean, you know, if you're on the hustle like I am, right, you know, and ask your mom, I'm a hustler, right? So is that the first thing you learn is you know how to unplug your mic. So as soon as I walk in the building, they put a mic on me, right? So I know how to unplug it. So think about this, right? They're probably mic up 10 to 12 people every day, and I'm always one of them. So everybody's listening to these different conversations, not only in the building, but there's people in LA listening to them. And so if they hear something going good, then they tell one of the three camera crews to go to that person to film what's happening, right? And so there was a couple times that, you know, there was things when, you know, we had to deal with some discipline stuff and some things couldn't, because of privacy issues, we couldn't put it out there, right? But the kid said yes, then we did it. If you talk to your mom, I'm not a fan of the 3C2A.
Hey, Coach, really, really quick, the mic went out really fast. Hold on.
Because of how they expect us to treat them or not to help them out, right? And so I wanted that to happen. In fact, during the show, I was hit with a decorum violation, sanctioned. And they didn't show me fighting it, right? And I fought it. And, of course, I won because I always win. And you can ask your mom that, right? But, you know, they held me accountable for something that no other AD in the state would ever be accountable for but me. And it was ridiculous, right? So I want you to think about this. You play a game. You guys lost last year in the championship, right, at Palm Beach, right, the way. And I don't mean to put it down, but it was a great accomplishment, by the way. So after the game, you're in the locker room and, you know, emotions are high or whatever. Maybe some profanity was used or whatever, right? But it's an hour and a half after the game. Why is that my responsibility? I mean, and it's not directed at the other team, right? I mean, it's done, right? It's over with. But now you want me to – you're sanctioning me because someone said something in the locker room an hour and a half after the game? Isn't the locker room – we always say that's your sanctuary as players?
Yeah.
You can vent?
100%.
Right? You got to give a player a chance. Like I tell our guys, you've seen our locker room. You saw them in the show dancing, having music, right?
Yeah.
I don't know they're doing in that. Because that's their locker room. That's their peace. Like I tell them, this is your domain. I expect you to keep it clean. I expect you to follow these rules. You know, put your chairs up, no food, whatever. And, you know, keep it reasonable, right? Now, if I have to come into that locker room, all hell is going to be paid. And so, right? Because I don't, that's your, you got to, they got to have a sanctuary where they can just be themselves, right? But now you're telling me I got to monitor that and I got to, you know, oversee it. I know. And your mom and I may have different opinions about it, you know. But to an athlete, they got to have a chance to vent. They just had a bad practice. Coach B just ripped them all practice long. They want to go in there and, you know, F me. That's their business, right? Get it out. But because the next day we got to love each other up and go do it again. Just like if you and your mom and dad have an argument at home, you got to be able to slam your room and go in your room and vent and then come back and hug each other up and let's go again, right? But that's that's how the world works. But now they, you know, so they, I'm bemoaning this on the Netflix. They didn't put it out there. I was ripping,
yeah.
I was ripping the executive director. Of course, they got rid of him too, by the way. So I was happy.
You know, every time. So for those who are listening, my mom's the AD, or our mom's the AD at DVC, a community college near Laney, about 30 minutes.
In the same rival, actually.
Rival. It wasn't much of a rivalry game when you guys played him, I'll tell you that.
but let me also say this. Your mom is one of the good ones, right? She gets it. She's very, very – I mean, I go to her all the time. That's what she says. I'm always calling her for advice.
Yeah, that's a
– interpretation on rules, because I see rules – way different than most people, right? You know, like, hey, you know, it's like, you guys just got done playing a hard practice, man. Can I give you a bottle of Gatorade? According to the rules, no, you can't. You can't feed them and give them drinks. Are you kidding me? Come on.
You know, you know, this is – so when my mom always talks about you, right, when she's like, this is how – it's funny how she impersonates you. Whenever she's like – so it's like, I just got a call from Coach Beam today. And she always impersonates you as the angry. She's like – and my mom always says, she says her first line is like, what did you do now, coach? What'd you do now, John? And you're like, ah, blah, blah. That's how she imitates you. She's always aiming, yelling at the rules. And my mom, and my mom's like, the voice of reason.
It is, but it's because I think one of the things that makes it difficult or good is because I am also the coach as well as the AD.
Yeah.
So your mom can wear a hat as the athletic director, as an administrator. I can wear it as that or the coach. I choose, you know, it's hard. And like I tell everybody, I'm not a suit. You know, I wear shorts and tennis shoes, brother. I got flip-flops. I'm going to eat Spam Musubi. I'm going to have a good time, right? And so, you know, and so I look out for players, though, from a different point of view as their safety net, right? You know, this is something I've been doing for 40 years. And so things like a violation, right? So like the one guy talked about, you know, that when, if his parents and then, you know, his mom and their kids didn't have any food, that I brought a bag of groceries to the house. That's what you do, right? That's what human beings do to other human beings. Cause we you know, that's, we're good people. But the 3C2A says, no, you can't do that. That's illegal. Really? Being a good human being is illegal? Makes no sense.
I think that's the, like, there's such a, with the NCAA, I drive my mom nuts at home too, because we would go on hikes this whole summer and I would just rip the NCAA for so many things. Like, there's so many things that I just don't agree with. And it continues just to baffle me. I think how they're handling the current situation right now with the Corona is just horrible. They're just like really leaving schools out to dry and leagues out to dry, and there's no sort of organization. And I don't know how the 3C2A is handling it.
Same.
But I can imagine that it's no different than the NCAA. And so what is, for you, what are, like, the first thing, if you were to change one thing, I think there, you could probably come up with a list, but what is one thing that you think that should be towards the top of the list that needs to be changed to help student athletes more?
So the first thing I do is I look at the constitution of the 3C2A, and it says their purpose is to enforce rules. I would change that and say, our purpose is to help students. Just that little change of that philosophy to me would change how the tenure of everything that we do. And it'd be the same in the NCAA, right? It would be to help students, right? To be there for them and not the bureaucracy of the NCAA or the 3C2A. We all forget why we're doing the job we're doing, you know? And that's the sad part, you know, as two very good volleyball players or great volleyball players in a volleyball crazy state with the only school and probably struggling, luckily your parents can help you too, but shouldn't you be able to make some money off of who you are so that you can pay the bills and eat well, or, you know, maybe take a trip over to Maui or the Big Island and go diving like I do, you know, right? And you could put clinics on in both those islands and make good money. But we don't 100%. Allow that. And yet at the same time, while you'd be doing that, you'd be helping the school because you'd be promoting University of Hawaii, helping the team, helping volleyball, Hawaii volleyball, and more importantly, helping the next generation of young people to love the sport that you two love.
All right.
What is wrong with that, guys?
Yeah, 100%. I think, yeah, like – For universities to be straight out paying out cash, like, I can understand that, why that should not be legal and everything. But if kids are, like, going out working and putting in a lot of work, like you said, working in the community or doing stuff online, social media, finding out ways to kind of promote and grow the sport or the university, or just that were really or good things going on in the community. I think that needs to be changed. Like, even to the point where, like you said, like, schools are limited where they how much they can feed a kid. I'm like, there's kids who literally can't afford, I think in your case, especially with you, there's kids who can't afford to eat three meals a day. And they're cracking down for, like you said, like, you can't even give a kid a Gatorade after practice. And that's what drives me nuts. I sit here, it's like, universities should not be, there should be no limit on the basic needs for a kid to survive in school. Because I think the whole point of the, I'm more familiar with the NCAA. I don't know how similar the CC2A is, but I think the whole thing is they want equality between the general student population and student athletes. And so if anybody in the general student population is allowed to go out and work and get a job and host whatever, like, so I don't understand why student athletes who go out and they do the same type of work aren't allowed to profit and make a living to be able to just live like a normal life and not have to worry about scrounging for food and whatever they need to do. And so I 100% agree with you. And like you said, it drives my mom nuts. Some of my views drives my mom nuts as well. Like, I'm sure that some of your views too. So, but
let's just think about it, right? If you're a normal student at the University of Hawaii and you're an influencer, right? And you have all these followers on social media, you can make millions of dollars less, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah. Why can't you do it? Or if you're a computer science guy, you can go out and sell your skill set, right, while you're still on scholarship, right, and sell your – you can be coding for somebody else on the side and make all this money. So same thing that you can do, you know, you should be able to do the same thing as an athlete. But, of course, the NCAA says no, right? You have a marketable skill. It may not be coding, but the skill is YouTube, right, whatever YouTube bring, which happens to be volleyball. So I don't, you know, now if you were just a club volleyball player going to the University of Hawaii, you could do all those same things.
100%. Yeah.
Right? That's all I'm saying. You know, it makes no sense. And for us, we were on a thing, your mom was on the same, we were on the Zoom meeting for this R1, R2 training. It was 300 coaches and athletic directors. And they started talking about impermissible benefits. And on the chat, I wrote down, shame on all of us for allowing a kid to sleep in his car and we can't do anything about it. Because that's what you saw. I couldn't do a thing about it. And then, because I have a social worker that offered to help him find housing, one AD came back and said, hey, that could be a violation because that social worker only works with student athletes. I go, are you freaking kidding me? And you know what? Write me up because I'm going down for that too. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let the kid sleep in his car. I'm not going to let the social worker not help. Come on, guys.
No, 100%. I mean, there's so many rules that – like every day you could go through stuff that's just like ridiculous to me. And I think the more you look into it, the more you see, it's just like, it's a business for them and they're looking for the biggest way to make money.
I mean,
and a lot of their decisions, you know, they claim to put the student athletes first, but a lot of times I think it's kind of a cover up a lot. And it's at the end of the day, it's a business. And I tell kids that all the time, like once you get past, even like at the junior level, like, people ask me all the time, what's the most like genuine fun you've ever had playing the sport? And it was absolutely like when I was juniors, because there's no money involved in it. Like, you're not making more scholarship money. You're not worried about having to pay bills or whatever. You're not like, there's nothing. It's just, you go, you play with your friends after you go get dinner. Like, it's just really fun. And then as soon as you get into college, and especially now as a pro athlete, it's 100% a business. And the decisions being made from the athlete and the club and the organization side and the university side is 100%. It's just about what is going to make us the most money at the end of the day. And they might frame it certain ways, but they're like money, everything is revolved around money. And it's difficult. Like you said, it's really difficult to see, even in the show, like you see kids living in cars, like just in really tough situations, and there's no way to help legally, I guess. And so it's really difficult. And I 100% agree with you.
Think about this, right? You guys can appreciate this. So Rolo does a good job at University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. He's making, you know, $400,000, $500,000, whatever he's making, right? He takes the Wazoo job. He's making over a couple million, right? That's great for him, right? So he leaves his contract. He goes there. But all Jared and all the kids on basically contract to University of Hawaii, can they go leave for a better deal? They're stuck.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
It's not equitable, right?
No, so, 100%.
Anyway, I digress. I'm sorry. Let's go to France. Let's talk about Hawaii, man. Come
that's,
on.
That's thing I want to
ask was talk to you about is how I'm sure the guys, especially when they go to different schools, I haven't seen any because I know some came here. I haven't seen any of them, but I'm sure they're enjoying their newfound success or the success in the show. When you know they're probably getting a bunch of Instagram followers, you're probably and they're probably like, oh, getting all recognized, like, oh, hey, like I know you were on Last Chance U, and they're like, yeah, I mean, well, you know, they're probably enjoying that.
I can't wait to go back to Hawaii. We go about 3 times a year, right? So I can't wait to get my Kama Aina rates, you know, when I get give me some free pokey. But yeah, I mean, for me in the show it shows that I know zero about social media, right? So I had to get on social media. Right now, like I'm over 10,000 followers on Twitter and Instagram, you know. Dior was like, I think, you know, a couple hundred followers. Now he's over 30,000 followers, right, at UH. And so it's good, but you know, again, Dior, think about it, right? He has this notoriety, he has this quote fame, but why? Because he was not treated very well as a kid because he had a horrible situation. Is that the way you want it? I'd rather do it the way you two did it. You know, it was being icons of volleyball at the University of Hawaii. That would be a better way to be known and get fame. So, I think it's been tough, you know, is in Kentucky, and he told me this story. So they're meeting in person for school, and he went to class, and the teacher, they all said, hey, you're the guy from that Last Chance U. And the teacher goes, but there's no plagiarism here. We're going to kick you out if you plagiarize. Just come and ask me for help. I'll help you all you want. So you don't have to plagiarize. He just laughed, you know, right. You know, but the point is how many kids, and that's what we do at the community college, right? I mean, you two are ready to go to a 4-year school, right? But a lot of them kids aren't yet ready, but they will be ready. And so we teach them that at Laney, right? So he didn't get, you know, plagiarism. I mean, he should have, but he didn't. But the teacher didn't, by right, she could have kicked him out of the class, and actually they could have kicked him out of school, right? But they didn't. They said, all right, look, you got a zero on it. You give me another chance. Make it a teachable moment. And they did. And he ended up passing the class, right? And that's what I think community colleges are supposed to be for. It's about teachable moments, right? When we had incidents on our team last year, you know, when kids break rules or, you know, something a little bit different, instead of kicking them off, you know, I did kick some off, no doubt. But other ones, you know, again, because different rules. Well, there's a homeless encampment right outside of Laney, right? Tiny sheds. So we went on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. and fed them, right? Now, the kids got to see that, and you know, and then they had to write a reflection paper to me about their experience feeding homeless and what it meant. And you know, for one of them, it just reminded them that they were homeless at one point, you know, and this has brought back memories, good and bad, of what it was like. And so that was good. And you know, hopefully it transformed him to do better. He's now has an A degree, and he's had a Division I offer. Hopefully he'll go, but with COVID, nothing's happening right now. So again, it's all about making things teachable moments, right? And it's going to make them, you know, at University of Hawaii, they're winning championship. They're making you better volleyball players. At Laney College, I'm going to try to win championship, and I'm going to try to win, you know, a lot of football games. But really, my job is to make you a better human being, better in a lot of cases, better man. And so that's where I want to make sure that I keep winning championships at, right? And, you know, that I can keep making young men into men, you know, having guys to be fathers, not just sperm donors, right? You know, mm-hmm. Things of that nature. So I think those are the important things.
100%. And like you just alluded to, we have to ask a question or two about Hawaii before we let you off here. We need to know, because I would say most of the listeners are from Hawaii here. What is, because we ask a lot of similar questions about Hawaii, but we have to ask what your favorite food place is, and then your favorite memory from visiting islands, from your lifetime. What's your favorite memory from going there?
I think, well, food places, they're all good, right? Anywhere I can get pokey, I'm a happy kid, right? You know, and that gets, you know, look, I'm not picky. I go right across the street to ABC store because I stay at the Ilokai a lot to get Spam Musubi, right? You can't mess up Spam Musubi, right?
No, yeah, impossible.
But, you know, I think One of the places I like, I mean, my wife loves Hula Grill, which is above Duke's because we try to get there for a sunset, right? Mm-hmm. We like Roy's over in Hawaii Kai again because you can have a nice view over that, right over that.
Yeah.
But, you know, any food truck really, to be honest, is good for me. It's just the view sometimes, right? If we're going to go for a nice dinner. And we always, because we always stay at the Ilikai, we always have a great view of the sunset, right? So, and then we have a place in Maui we stay at. Sometimes our balcony is right, we're right on the water. So we'll just grab some McDonald's sometimes and sit on our balcony, you know, just enjoy the sunshine. Because when you see the sunset, every food tastes great, right?
Yeah,
but one of the best memories that I have, I think, of Hawaii, and I hope people can appreciate this, right? Is that I came over in 1994 and I brought my team from Skyline. So I brought 38 city kids to Skyline. I mean, from Skyline, from Oakland to Hawaii to play the Shanakina Classic against St. Louis. And we played well. We lost, but we played well. But that wasn't the highlight. The highlight was we went to the PCC, right? I took them over to the Polynesian Cultural Center. And there's... And I'm sure you've been there, right? So they have those little boats that kind of take you around that lazy river and they show you different villages from the different islands, right? And so we're sitting there waiting, like my wife and my daughters and my couple of my coaches and their wives were waiting for the boat to get on the next ride. And here comes up this boat and it's probably got 25 black kids in it, right? All surrounded, four older, like senior citizen type age, Japanese tourists. And they're coming in. And they got then they're yelling, you know, like Oakland, you know, the town, and they got the Japanese people like throwing up the town. It was so cool. It was so cool. And you know, and just to see that, but the kids' experience from their time at Hawaii when I brought them, I mean, we went out to the Arizona Memorial and they saw the oil still bubbling up and they were saying, "Hey, we learned that in history class. It really is true, you know." We went to Punch Bowl and saw all the markers, right? They went to the beach in Waikiki and thought it was the biggest wave they've ever seen, right? And they went to the ABC store and bought a mask and a snorkel and laid down at the beach in Waikiki behind the wall there, you know, out there by the break. Mm-hmm. And they were laying on their stomach kind of crawling and saying they were snorkeling and just so excited that they saw these little fish run by. But yet what it did was it showed that we could take this group of young boys at the time and put them in a totally different environment and their eyes were wide open to what could be, right? What life could really hold for them. And that's what the islands totally adopted our kids. They adopted the players we were there. You know, they made them feel like, you know, they belong. They didn't look, even though they looked a little different, they didn't care because the kids had such joy. And in Hawaii, you know, it's all about having fun, the happiness, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's what it was. And so, yeah, I mean, and now, you know, my wife and I, we try to get over there at least three times a year. I'm a certified diver. So, I want to get some great diving in. And then, you know, I always got to go over to Waimea to jump off the rock, you know, and have fun after that, you know. So, you know, we do that. And a good friend of mine lives over in Kauai. So, yeah, it's always good. You know, there's family everywhere on the island that we see, you know, we've known over the years, and we just come and embrace it all.
Yeah. John, next. You got the connections.
Jeez.
You got the connections in Hawaii.
Next time you come, I got to link up with you for a day.
So where's your best place to eat at? You guys have been there now 4 years.
You said it, up. McDonald's. That's the best, you know, the cheapest. No, they're probably the best for me. There's a place called A Place to Eat right down the road here. And we go every 30 seconds or every other day pretty much. And we go there to eat. But I got to link up with you when you get here. You're crazier than I am to hopping off cliffs and whatnot. Dang.
There's a couple good ones on Kauai that go off, right? Yeah. And well, my friends that live there, like they kind of banned me because I guess someone died there or something. Yeah. And there's a spot we go into the sugarcane fields, and you end out on top of this waterfall. And we drop off into this inland pool, kind of like. So yeah, it's been I do it all. I mean, life is too short, right? I've skydive. I've dove over 100 feet. You know. It's like life is so short that you want to enjoy it. I want to live it to the fullest, right? And so, yeah, I mean, it's you know, I want to do it. It's I work hard, but when it's done, I want to play hard.
Nah, I get it. I get it.
I think that was really evident in the show too. Like that was my favorite thing about the show is seeing how you interact with the student. And that mentality that you just said was seen in your coaching and just off the field and with your family. I think that's the coolest thing about the show is seeing those relationships.
You saw me on my my Segway.
Yeah, my mom said that was the last chance to use people. I was like, dang, he's rolling in style over there.
Yes, so I get these calls from the coaches like, really, dude, you coach on a Segway? I go, no. The cameraman had a Segway so it could keep up with the kids running, you know, to film them, right, when they're running routes or whatnot. And so I'm like, oh, I can ride. And the kids go, coach, you can't ride a Segway. Don't even pretend. Like I go, look, I grew up surfing, right? I can ride a Segway. So I got on it. I had to prove to him I could do it, you know. And I started out holding the fence first to make sure I get my balance right. But then I rocked it, you know.
You look like a natural. So one more thing. This is the last thing I want to, before we let you go. So, and we give my mom loads of crap for this. So apparently you approached my mom when you were at DVC and you're like, I got to get you on the show. And my mom said, hell no. And when my mom said that, I can't tell you, every night, like when we were watching the show, and even when we weren't watching the show, when we finished it, we're like, or before it, we were like, Mom, I can't believe you did that. You're like, we make her feel so bad. She's like, stop. I'm like, why did you do this to us? Like, why?
Because, you know, the thing was, when we played DVC, right, I said, you're going to come to the game because, you know, they're going to film and, you know, they've seen me have conversations with you on the phone about the things I was fighting, you know. She goes, oh, hell no, I'm not coming. Like, just come.
Like, come on. I was like, Mom, what are you doing? Why would you do this?
But, you know, like, it was funny, you know, just some of the stuff that didn't get, you know, like, think about this, right? They film 6 days a week, 6 to 7 hours a day for 2.5 months. And we saw 8 hours of film. You know, where's the rest of the film laying? You know?
Yeah. They got it on hard drives. They got, I mean, they got about like 20, 30 of those. But, John, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. This has been awesome.
Keep up. Keep doing what you're doing, volleyball. I love it. I want to see you play beach volleyball, though.
So I mean, if they allow us.
You know, I'm so bad. I used to play beach volleyball in San Diego, but, like, my team would have 4. Because we couldn't cover enough ground with just 2 of us.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully next summer, Gage and I can play some beach. You have to come down to Santa Cruz maybe and take a look at us play.
That'd be fun.
We play together a lot. So,
good. Well, good luck in Germany. Good luck in Hawaii. Please stay safe, y'all. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you, coach.
Aloha.
Aloha, brother.
John Beam, what a freaking legend. So, again, for those of you guys who don't know our connection, my mom's an athletic director at Dabo Valley College. A rival of theirs right down the road of Laney College. John Beam, the star of Last Chance U. If you haven't seen it, it is phenomenal. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's just a show where they go around and they go visit the community college around the nation and they give you behind the scenes and they follow these kids, like he said, for about 2.5 months all day. It really gets you an inside look on, well, perspective, you know, how good I have it, how good others have it. You know, you got kids living in cars trying to earn a D1 scholarship for their futures. Really, really powerful stuff. Also very entertaining. As you can probably tell, John Beam is an electric personality, so it's good to have him on the show. And hopefully when he gets to Hawaii here, I can join him for a nice cliff jumping session. But we've had a lot of fun here. And on If You Can't Handle the Heat, I am Gage Worsley, Joe Worsley signing off here. Join us back next week. This has been Out of System.